The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I believe that we're live. We should be good to go. Welcome, everybody, to the NXT post-show here at Fightful. I'm Steven Jensen, joined by Alex Pulowski. Make sure, as always, to shoot over a super chat if you want your statement or your question read out on the air. And there's a lot to get to tonight. So before we get into all that, Alex, how are you doing tonight, man?
Good, man. This is one of those things where prior to last week, I had never heard of a four-way 60-minute Ironman match. Like, I had never considered it. And then they were like, oh, it's these four guys. I was like, well, you don't have to worry about conditioning with those dudes. They could probably do a 90-minute or 120-minute Ironman match and be like, no, I'm good. Let's do it again tomorrow. So I didn't know what to expect as far as, like, how it was going to shake out. It didn't shake out the way I thought it would. But I was just rapt watching these four consummate professionals like work their craft. This was as good as I could have expected it to be.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously, everyone, we're going to get to the Fatal Four Way or the Four Way Ironman match. We'll talk about that kind of towards the end. We'll go kind of step by step throughout the show. But along with what you're saying, Alex, I mean, those four competitors, like, it was an hour of straight working. Like, there wasn't, like, any just standing around or, you know, just it was an hour of action, man. A half hour in, I was like, there's still another half hour left. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, no. When it all got down to one all with 20 minutes to go, I was like, I can't believe there's still 20 minutes to go.
Yeah, man. Speaking of super chats, I got a couple in already. I want to get to. So starting off with Giannis, 18-point Kumpo. He says, can't wait for you guys to talk about Check Note 60-man Ironman match according to Vic Joseph. Yeah, that's funny. Vic Joseph. Oh man, speaking of Vic Joseph. Any quick thoughts on Marwan Allo departing the WWE?
It's sad, man. Like, they never – listen, I mean, ever since they, like, just, like, they dumped him down from SmackDown to NXT, and they said, well, here, do the Junior League. And he said, fine, I'm going to embrace this, and I will be the voice of an era of wrestling that is going – like, that for me was the greatest. Like, that era, Mauro calling NXT, that era, up until the last few months with COVID and on USA and stuff. But, like, that last couple of years on the WWE Network, that was just such great stuff. And I thought he added a lot to it. Because when you heard Mauro go crazy over something, you knew it was legit. Now, were some of his crazy calls like, oh my God, more something than something, pop culture reference number 12. Did they grate on me occasionally? Yes. But I thought it was certainly better than completely packaged Michael Cole, Tom Phillips, and to a lesser degree, Vic Joseph. And having them say, okay, bye-bye, Mauro, to me seems like, oh, this is definitely now corporate NXT, because we got to have the packaged, perfect, polished guy who's never going to be weird and say things that people are going to be like, I don't understand what that reference is. No, it's just Vic Joseph just saying his thing. Vic Joseph is basically like somebody cloned Michael Cole and grew him out of a petri dish and then stretched him out so he's 6'9" and very skinny and then said, this is now do this. Do the exact thing that the person we cloned you from does.
And I'm like, that's interesting to me at all. So I'm going to miss Morrow and what he added and brought to NXT, mostly because I see him as the voice of that generation of NXT, which to me was the most fun I've had watching wrestling in my life.
Yeah. I echo everything you said. It's one of those things too. Like as you can see by my backdrop, I'm obviously big into mixed martial arts. So like Marwan Ali does great work with Bellator. He does great work with Showtime Boxing. Like he did great work with New Japan while he was there. Like he's the kind of guy where like a lot of people are speculating like what's going to happen tomorrow. And I'm like, well, I mean, he definitely has no lack of opportunities. Like I know he deals with the mental health very heavily, and it's something where I don't know if that plays a factor into all of this. But regardless, I just want what's best for Morrow. I hope whatever he decides to do next, he really enjoys doing. And yeah, it sucks as a fan of Morrow though, because I really did think he added a lot to NXT. But you're right. Every now and then he'd hit you with like a. He whips and nay-nays him into the corner. And it's just like, okay, like that's a little too much. So shout out to Marwan and Ala. Hopefully I see him calling pro wrestling again soon, because although he does great with the combat sports, he is really great for pro wrestling as well, in my opinion. So another super chat here. TD Stinger says, I understand why they did that finish since they have another Tuesday show to promote. Still, to have a 60-minute Iron Man match with no winner is not something I can call a good decision. Alex Heaton 6, what do you respond with that?
Well, I'll respond to Heaton 6. We'll see what happens in game two. But I don't know. Like it's certainly something different. I personally, I loved the finish. Now we'll see how much I love the finish when we come down to it next week. What happens in that match? But the way it was all laid out, the perfect timing of all of it. I certainly enjoyed it. And while I was watching the match, I loved every second of it. Now I get to the end and I go, well, now if you were just going to do that, we didn't need all the rest of it. But while I was watching it, I was totally into it. So I'm going to give them a pass.
Yeah. Same, dude, we're on the same page, 100%. I did see some people on Twitter. I don't have it pulled up at the moment, but I saw quite a few people actually calling this ahead of time. Now, I don't know if they had spoilers or, like, what the situation was, but I saw people out there kind of, like, just watch. Like, it'll be some sort of non-finish. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, I could see them doing that, but at the same time, like, this is the first time this match has ever happened, and like it would be great to see just a definitive winner, especially because one of these two is going to win the belt next week anyways, theoretically. Yeah. So,
we'll talk about it when we get to the end, but I did love William Regal turning like a straight up one-on-one match into like the most important thing ever.
Yes, sudden death.
One fall to the finish. Sudden death. It'll be sudden death, gentlemen. Sudden death. I know that most regular matches are also sudden death, but this one will be more deadly and more sudden.
Yes. Some more super chats to get to. Thank you all so much for these, by the way. Just another reminder, anyone who sends a super chat, as you are hearing us right now, we will answer your questions and read out your statements. Justin Lopez with a super chat says, with so many guys in the match, a tie was an extremely high possibility, so I didn't mind the finish. So, yeah, we're both kind of along those lines as well. Like, yeah. I think we both would have liked the finish, but this is it's understandable, and we'll definitely talk about that. Absolutely. Thank you. Oh, and thank you again, Justin Lopez, for another super chat. Says, and Morrow knew everyone's backstories better than any other play-by-play. Yep. I agree with you there. See, that's the thing about Morrow that makes him so fun to listen to, especially when you see – like, I'm sure you've seen these, and I'm sure a lot of people watching have seen these, when they have, like, a camera on him during takeovers and stuff.
Yes.
And he's just standing up, and he's screaming, and he's pointing, and he's cheering. I mean, he's like one of us, and that's what makes it feel so good to watch him.
What I love is that, like, he's focused entirely on the monitor. He's got no notes. He's just focused on the monitor. He's going crazy, and then he'll look up, because they can't believe what he saw on the monitor. Is that real? You know, like he gets so into it. I mean, listen, I'm always going to be more into it watching it being called by somebody who's into it. That's one of the main reasons that I don't love AEW commentary, because I feel like Jim Ross would rather be anywhere else but sitting there watching commentary sometimes. And that's not my idea of a good time.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well. Evan Wright with Super Chat says, Vic Joseph not selling the two sweet killed me. I don't know if I think I'm...
Yeah. Well, again, that is, I would think, a directive from the corporate side. Like, that moment between Adam Cole and Finn Balor, where they two sweeted each other, like, that's a major deal from their time in Japan, but with a different company in Japan, so we're not allowed to talk about it. Mauro Ranallo, I guarantee you, would have said something about it, because he doesn't care about that crap. But Vic Joseph was like, hey, kid, or we'll bust you back down to NXT UK like that.
Yeah, when I initially read that statement just then, I didn't read it the way that it was meant to be read. Yes. Yeah, when the two of them did the two sweet. Yes. I'm with you, Evan. Evan also adds that the commentary brought the match down in his opinion. I think we can kind of say that just kind of overall, if you're kind of a fan of Mauro and kind of not as, because when I watch the show, it's similar to what you just said, Alex. I mean, when I watch that show, I think like Michael Cole, Vic Joseph, Tom Phillips, you know, like these kind of guys who it's like clearly under the Michael Cole tree, they're incredibly professional broadcasters and they are cookie cutter examples of exactly what the WWE wants on commentary. And what I like about NXT so much, as I'm sure so many of you listen are along the same lines, is like, I like that it's different and I like that it sounds different and looks different and feels different. And, but yeah, Evan, I'm with you. I wasn't huge on the commentary, but at the same time, like, I don't think it like ruined anything, but it's just, it could have been better. I'm with you. Paddleron 6 with the super chat says, Mauro is definitely one of a kind. Yeah. But it's more love for Mauro in here in the chat for sure. Another super chat, Giannis 18 point Kumpo says, it kind of felt like a murder mystery with all the red herrings, and it turned out the victim killed himself. Heat clean sweep, or hashtag heat clean sweep.
I mean, like, for one thing, it's a cute username. If the refs would call Giannis like they do any other MVP, he wouldn't be playing only 30 minutes a game, because the foul calls they call on him are ridiculous. You guys got a good win. You very well may win this series. I doubt it'll be a sweep. I don't know what else he said, but that's it. I'm not responding to that from this guy. Right.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what you meant by that, Giannis. But at the same time, maybe you meant like the main event, kind of like all you kind of didn't know where it was heading, and you kind of pulled in a whole bunch of different directions. I'm not sure, but thank you once again, Giannis 18 Kumpo, for the super chat. We've got a few more super chats to get you. Thank you all so much for these. We'll make sure to address every single one of them. Marco Dominguez says, sorely could have used Mauro calling this a quadruple quagmire. So that would have been Mauro's. That's funny. Good one, Marco. I agree with you. JJ Lee says, I don't believe Vic knew about the Bullet Club past. It's not corporate directive. Mauro just knows his stuff. I mean, I think that could be possible as well.
I mean, listen, if you got somebody calling NXT who doesn't know Bullet Club, jeez.
True. That's very, very true. All right. Well, we're caught up on the super chats for now. Once again, keep those rolling in. We'll make sure to address every single one of them, question, statement, whatever you got. And also, I want to remind everyone, you can catch myself and Alex on Fightful Select. That's the most direct way that you can support Fightful. We have a ton of podcasts over there. I do The Weekender, Alex does Sour Graps, which I put him over every time we talk, which in my opinion is the best podcast on the platform. And not only that, it's worth the price of admission to Fightful Select alone for that one podcast. You're not just getting that. You're not just getting The Weekender. You're getting Sean Ross Sapp. You're getting Jimmy Van. You're getting a bunch of just bonus content, a bunch of exclusives, news. It is, once again, the best way or the most direct way to support Fightful over there at Fightful Select. And I promise you, you'll get your money's worth. I was a long time subscriber before I was ever even involved in Fightful myself. So this is coming from somebody who is a fan, and I'm speaking from the heart there. It's a really great service that they got over there at Fightful Select. So, Alex, you want to get into the first match here of NXT tonight?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's do that. Let's review the show a little bit. So we've got a street fight between Legado del Fantasma and Breezango and Isaiah Swerve Scott teaming up. So we had six-man action. Breezango, the new NXT tag team champions as of, I think it was last week, right? When we did the show last. So, new tag team champs. And of course, Legado del Fantasma has Escobar, who is the current cruiserweight champion. Alex, what did you think about this one? What do you think about Swerve getting the, essentially the clean pin in the six man over the cruiserweight champion who he lost to last week via loaded mask?
The loaded mask. I loved this match. This was low key one of my favorite matches of the year. It's certainly, definitely way up there on my list of NXT matches to happen, you know, during the pandemic era. I thought all of these spots were so cleverly crafted. Everything going back, one of the craziest spots in the match happened really early, where somebody had set up a chair, you know, in between two of the turnbuckles, like as a little barrier, and Scott slung Irish whipped Mendoza in there, and he was able to stop himself from before he hit the chair, but then he got drop kicked in the butt and sent the top of his head into the chair anyway. And I was like, that was really clever and smooth. And it was a great way to kick off, no, we got ideas. Like, there are some ideas that we're going to do in this. And there was some great stuff. Listen, everything I really liked everything. I loved that that Imperium is pissed at Breezango. And they're willing to be like, listen, we don't love you guys, Legado del Fantasma, either, but we all hate Breezango, right? So let's beat up Tyler Breeze 5-on-1 until a forklift arrives. And I mean that moment was just so great, because also here I'm gonna talk most of tomorrow, because I'm gonna do my normal Tuesday sour graps. I'm gonna do tomorrow because I'm doing this tonight. And I can't do two shows in a row or I will have no voice. So most of tomorrow's Sour Grab show is going to be how much Kevin Dunn sucks and how he can't figure out what camera to use ever. Or he uses all the cameras. That shot of the forklift coming into frame from beneath, making it look like it was 30 feet in the air, cut to a camera shot from above the forklift, keeping it looking like it was so high when it was really like a couple of feet taller than the top of the turnbuckles.
Right.
It was still, it made it look amazing. That's something that you'd never see. And somebody asked me, where did they even get a forklift? I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure Eric Rowan sold it to Fandango on the cheap when he got WWE, because it was probably Eric Rowan's forklift from last year. I thought all of this was great. Spot after spot after spot. I loved that the right guy got the pinfall on the right guy, continuing that cruiserweight championship feud. And I loved Escobar getting up in that driver and knowing he was about to get put on the top of his head, and that scream and the big eyes right before he falls down. That's, it adds so much. There were certain guys who will let you know that they know they're in the middle of a move and they're totally effed. And I love when guys do that. I think it adds so much to the move, and I love the finish.
I couldn't agree more. There was so much good stuff in this one. Even the beginning of the match, as Breezango is trying to get in the ring, Legado del Fantasma attacks them before they can even get in, start jumping over the top ropes. It got to a fast start. And then, I love the ending as well, where they had the camera right on Escobar's face right before he took that finish from Isaiah Swerve Scott, man. That was really good stuff. Do you think, I think it's pretty obvious, but do you think we're heading towards, you know, another big showdown between Swerve and Escobar for that cruiserweight title soon?
I mean, they really don't have a lot of, it's not a giant pool of cruiserweights they're using. Listen, I don't watch 205 Live anymore because it depresses me, because I remember the glory days. Tahuti Miles is a major character on that show. Ever Rise, the jobberiest of all jobber tag teams, and I'm pretty sure both those dudes are significantly over 205 pounds. They have a whole storyline over there. They don't have that they had this wonderful roster of cruiserweights that they could pull from to get guys to actually be in contention. But they don't right now. And so I'm totally fine with Swerve Scott and Escobar having multiple matches. I don't know if Scott winds up being the Cruiserweight champion. He may be like a placeholder with a long, great feud where he never gets over the top. Again, my pitch is always all these guys who are under the limit or near the limit, who are up on Raw or SmackDown and you're using them like crap, bring them down. Bring them down. At least let them wrestle a few matches down there. Like, there's a guy, Chad Gable, who's under 205 pounds or right around that limit. Like, he had one match on 205 Live against Jack Gallagher. Well, Jack Gallagher last year, but the match ruled. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. Next Cruiserweight champion, Chad Gable. And they never did it again. I was like, that he'd be so great. He'd be entirely different kind of tag team of a Cruiserweight wrestler. You have no other options right now. And I'm fine with that because I love these two guys. If the feud lasts until like Halloween, I might have a problem with it.
Right. Yeah. I feel the same exact way. And just once again, y'all, I cover 205 Live for the Weekender over at Fightful Select. So like, it's a show that I follow obviously very closely, and I'm more interested in 205 Live right now than I have been in a long time because of Escobar, because of Legado del Fantasma, because I'm a big fan of Isaiah Swerve Scott from his run on the Indies and in Lucha Underground, than seeing him do what he's doing. But it also, kind of to your point, Alex, it's a show that, I'll be totally transparent, like, it's a show that has very little consequences. Like, you're very rarely going to miss anything that actually really matters in the grand scheme of anything. But if you have a little extra time to kill, they always have solid wrestling. So it's like solid matches, people at least getting something to do. But it is funny, like you mentioned, like Ever-Rise and that kind of stuff. There's no tag team division, but they're a tag team and like that kind of stuff. So, yeah. JJ Lee with another super chat says, I agree with you, Alex. They just have slim pickings when it comes to that seat. Speaking of commentary, says that I think Mauro would still be there if his mom was okay. Now, I did hear that also. I believe that Mauro is in Canada with his mom. I don't know if she's like sick or I think she may have been sick for a while. And maybe now it's, you know, so that's one of those things with Mauro. Like, I'm not saying this as a negative, but like, companies kind of have to bend over backwards to an extent for Mauro. And I'm not saying it's unjust, but it's just one of those things where, like, because of kind of the way that he is, you kind of have to treat him a bit differently than you would probably just treat like the average employee. He's a bit more sensitive to certain things and that kind of stuff. And obviously he's going to be very, very close to his family. So if there's anything like that going on with him where he doesn't feel comfortable commentating, like, I totally, totally understand that. But I also totally understand, right? And I also totally understand, like, NXT is in a tough spot too with it, because like, if Mauro can't be at the shows and they don't have a lot of heads up, like, they have to be prepared with other commentators and stuff like that. So there's a lot of layers to it, but at the end of the day, I know we're all, you know, fans of his, at least those of us who have spoken about it right now. And once again, JJ Lee, thank you again for that super chat. Evan Wright with another super chat says, Kushida doing nothing is so frustrating. Oh man, Alex, you got any thoughts on that?
What's that? I'm sorry, I missed that one.
Yeah, Kushida doing nothing is so frustrating.
Oh my god! Like, here's the thing: like, when they had him in that Cruiserweight tournament, I was like, well, this is either going to be the next Cruiserweight champion, or he's going to get screwed out of it and wind up like the guy who wins it will be the heel that Kushida wins it from. But they can't even figure out like that. Like, Kushida is one of the greatest wrestlers to have ever lived. Like, I don't know how long that list is and where he is in it, but he absolutely is one of the greatest wrestlers to have ever lived. And to like have nothing for him means that you are bad. Means that you are bad at your jobs if you can't figure out something for Kushida. Like I don't, well, he's Japanese. I don't understand the Marty McFly gimmick. Then you suck. Then you suck. If you can't figure out something for one of the greatest wrestlers that ever lived, then you're terrible at your job.
There you go. I got nothing to add to that. I can't agree more. Obviously, I was a big fan of his New Japan work for quite some time, and it's kind of giving me like Hideo Itami vibes to a degree, where it's like, man, like, do they just not understand what they've signed here? But then again, Itami did get hurt a bunch. Like, I gotta at least throw that out there. But
yeah,
Kushida's been healthy though, right? So I don't know what's going on.
He's had a few injuries, but like, he's healthy now, as far as I know.
Right. Yeah, for sure. What was next on the show? We had Candice LeRae versus, I'm so bad with this last name always, Casey Catanzaro. I think I got it. I will say this, you know, Candice LeRae gets the win, and I am infinitely more entertained and interested in Candice LeRae now with the character she's doing now and the look she has now than she did at any other point so far in her NXT run. Alex, what did you think about this match and Lori getting the win?
Yeah, her NXT run before this change was literally Mrs. Gargano. And yet, even after the heel turn and the look changed and everything about her changed, she's still mostly Mrs. Gargano. I think it's kind of hilarious that she can't ever be anything other than Johnny's husband. wife. But I really love Candice LeRae, and I'm interested in this whole thing. Like, I know it's a setup. I know she's going to invite Tegan Knox over for dinner. For some reason, there's going to be a camera there, but they're not going to acknowledge the camera being there, but it's going to be obviously a cameraman from NXT in the dining room. It's going to be a weird deal, and then she's going to probably try and stab Tegan Knox with a kitchen knife. But I'm totally here for it because it's going to lead to Tegan Knox versus Candice LeRae. Match is fine. I love that Candice LeRae has that vicious finish. I think it's just so great for her, like the poison pixie, to have this match that literally just tries to murder somebody. Like, it's just great. I'm here for this Candice and Tegan thing. I also like that you have the Casey and Caden team that is consistent, even though if they never actually really have tag team matches, but they're always out there together. It's something together they're doing. Caden Carter is being rumored as somebody who's going to be part of Retribution. When they unmask, she'll be one of them. The reason I bring that up is that I always want there to be some measure of consistency from NXT character to main roster character when they get called up. So my hope is they're keeping Caden Carter out there hanging out with Casey Catanzaro, so she just keeps getting on TV. And like the NXT before the reveal of Retribution, if she's part of it, she just snaps and goes off and beats the ever-living piss out of Casey Catanzaro for no reason. And we have no idea why. And then we realize, oh, she's been hiding that she's this part of the evil faction this whole time, and now we see it. Because if she goes from like being Casey Catanzaro's best friend and, oh my gosh, kick out, girl, kick out. Oh, darn, it's okay. I'm giving you a hug. She goes from that to being like part of evil Retribution. And I'm like, what are you, like, you're not going to change her name or anything. She's just going to be the same thing, but they're going to completely change her character. I don't want that. I don't want that at all.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to see that with a lot of people. Like, I feel like it's going to be all these kind of people that, like,
I agree.
Yeah, we're familiar with their gimmicks, and, like, we know who they are, or at least most of them.
Like, Dijak, I'm fine with Dijak being part of it and being that, because he was always kind of, even when he was a babyface in NXT, he was kind of a tweener anyway, and he's been gone for a while. But the people who are consistently on TV and then, hey, we're different things now because we're on a different night of the week, I don't like that.
Yeah, I agree. And then you also have the ninjas too, where like Malcolm Bivens is like clearly one of them, and I'm like, what are you doing with this guy? Like, this is so much.
Well, you could just stop. What are you doing with the ninjas? Like, Akira Tozawa shows up at a pay-per-view as a ninja, and they've literally never given any reason why he became a ninja other than he's Japanese and all Japanese people are ninjas. Like, that's more than slightly racist. So, like, let's not. Yeah, the ninjas is all bad. It's all just a bad thing.
I wonder if they'll include any of those recent Evolve signings in Retribution. I wonder if any of them will be in there. I'm kind of curious about that as well. I'm a big Kurt Stallion fan, and I'm really sure. Really, yeah, I'm hope, but I don't know. Like, I'm not into Retribution, so it's one of those things where, like, no, I don't know. Like, I don't.
Nobody's into Retribution. Like, the Retribution. Here's how important that whole thing is. Like, last night, I haven't watched it yet because I only watched the edited 90-minute version of Hulu. Then, before I actually do the podcast, I go in and find all the stuff on my DVR that they edited out. One of the things they edited out was all of Retribution coming in and beating up, like, the Street Profits, the current tag team champions, and Andrade, and then Andre Garza pissing off and running away. That was a huge deal. Like, this faction that shows up and beats up people is such a big deal that you said, yeah, you can go ahead and edit that out of your 90-minute broadcast. That's not really important. Whatever, man. This Retribution thing is it's so bad already.
Unreal. A big group of jabronis, which, by the way, is now in the dictionary.
It is.
Moving on NXT, we had Rhea Ripley challenging Mercedes Martinez to a steel cage match. Yeah, we can give that a clap. That's
I'm so ready for this. Yeah. Is that going to be next week on Super Tuesday 2?
I think so, because I always have a hard time with her name too. Mercedes Martinez. She, you know, obviously accepted the match later in the show. So they're clearly trying to make a big deal out of these Super Tuesdays. And I would have to imagine that's going to be that's got to be next week. And that is a hell of a matchup right there. I'm very happy for that one.
Yeah, no, Rhea Ripley versus Mercedes Martinez in a steel cage is everything I want, provided that Rhea Ripley goes over, because we need to keep moving her forward, as opposed to like she says she's a total badass, and then something happens where she loses a match or she doesn't look great, and then she keeps saying she's a total badass. Eventually, everyone's going to not believe her. But she is a total badass. So stop making her be a liar and actually give her this really strong win over Mercedes Martinez, and then move her as far away from the Robert Stone brand as you could possibly go.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Next match we had Bronson Reed and Timothy Thatcher. This has been interesting, this whole booking with Bronson Reed to me, because like he beats Damian Priest, mm-hmm. like pre-ladder match, like yep. one-on-one, clean from my remembrance of it. And now, of course, Damian Priest is the North American champion. Bronson Reed goes out, and obviously, like they're doing something between Bronson Reed and Austin Theory, which we can talk about him as well. So basically, this match, you know, it was a good match, good hard-hitting match. I always enjoyed Timothy Thatcher's work. I like that he's just I think commentary just always refers to him as a grinder, which is a pretty accurate. And I love the fact that he just doesn't get dental work done. He just doesn't – like, he looks like a dude who wants to get punched in the face and, like, wants to fight you. And I like this, and I like Thatcher winning, and I think it all made sense with Austin Theory coming out and attacking him and all that stuff. He worked the arm, yada, yada. But it is – I feel like are they heading, you think, towards like another multi-person match between like Thatcher, Bronson, and Priest or something, with these guys kind of 50-50-50 booking each other?
I think you might get a triple threat for the number one contendership to Priest, you know? Like, I think that might be something that they go to. Or Thatcher might get the first shot. And then, you know, you get a little mini Reed versus Theory feud, and that leads into one of them getting a title shot. The North American champion has basically been absent,
like since social media. Yeah,
you know, so I mean, he became champion, and this is what they like to do. They're like, hey, here's your push, so you can become champion. Then you have the next 3 weeks off of TV. Like, that's not a great way to capitalize on your new champion. Like, listen, all things about Austin Theory aside, like, you know, outside of the ring, I'd be fine with Braun.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Austin Reed, you know, beating the hell out of him, and Austin Theory showing that he's got, you know, he's tough enough to hang with a guy the size of Bronson Reed. When and then Bronson Reed ultimately beats him. That's important. But I also really liked this match for what it was. I loved that Thatcher literally, like, he found an exploit, and he kept wrenching on that arm until it was over. And he, like, because he's a dog that you get, he just gets a hold of you and he's not going to let go. Those jaws are clamped shut. That's it. You can keep beating on him, but he's just going to keep coming back to that arm. And I love that Reed was just so powerful, but just couldn't quite get it done. I loved Thatcher selling, getting hit during that suicide dive, selling it as though he had burst an eardrum. I've never heard, I don't know if he actually did, but like, I've never seen anybody like make a very specific choice that is like, I'm going to sell getting hit in the head as though my ear is ringing and I don't know if it's bleeding or not. Like, that's a really cool idea for how to sell. And also, like, he was always shaking out the cobwebs. Like, I thought that was great. And the whole time he had Reed in that final arm bar, he was still, you could tell, trying to, like, sell the fact that his ear is ringing. I think that's great. Thatcher's a natural. I love watching him. I love that he sells for the big dudes, but still, like, goes for the limbs. I think that's great. I think Reed has a really bright future. I think he's a future North American champion. I think that I don't know what his ceiling is in a Vince-led promotion. Like, if he gets called up, is he just going to be like the heel fat guy who loses a lot? Is he going to be the heel Australian Otis? Like, are they going to give him, hey, he's fat, watch him jiggle? Like, I don't know what they're going to do with him, but I love watching him wrestle.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me of the guy on the UK brand. What's his name? Dan
Mastiff.
Dan Mastiff. Yes.
Yeah. Dave Mastiff.
Dave Mastiff. That's it. I was like in between two different people's names there. How they kind of, even with like the camera, like when he like stomps around and stuff, they're kind of like shaking the camera and stuff. Like, he's like this big, his Titantron reminds me of like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from like Ghostbusters, where he's like walking around the city and he's humongous. And I like the way that he works too, because like that, I like how both him and Thatcher were, because there were even points of this match where like Thatcher's on his back and like MMA style, like what you would see in like an actual fight, where Bronson's standing there and Thatcher's trying to kick him in the leg on his way up, and instead Bronson just jumps his sentons right onto him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just good stuff. I mean, that's what I want to see in pro wrestling. And then the struggle at the end, like you mentioned, the way that Bronson, he didn't just throw him right into Fujiwara armbar. He really, like, they were rolling around. He was working the limbs. He was changing direction. He was changing his grip and the position and everything. I mean, this was good. This was really good stuff. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing what both these guys do next. I don't know if you want to touch on the theory thing as far as just like the perspective of like, is it strange to see that he's on NXT after being pushed on Raw? These are things outside of wrestling happen, and now he's like on NXT instead of Raw. Is that strange to you?
I think that he they're confused about what he is. He's very young.
Right.
He's very young. And if you look over on AEW, they have a bunch of young guys there who are going to blossom and grow there. And I'm sure when guys like MJF and Sammy Guevara and Jungle Boy are 27, 28, 29, as opposed to 22 and 23, what they're going to be is going to be pretty crazy. So Austin Theory is super young and he is very talented. He's definitely got the look that Vince loves. But they don't know if they can yet make money with him. So they have to send him back down to NXT to get some seasoning, see what he's got. Maybe, hopefully, they're keeping an eye on his social media. they've got the passcode to his Instagram, and they can check and see who he's been DMing. But I think they're willing to give him a second chance, because let's be honest, they're giving everybody second chances except for the NXT UK guys, and really screw those guys. Nobody in the States knows who Travis Banks is anyway. Get him the hell out of here. So like that's what I believe, is that they're willing to give him that second chance and see what they have with him. They believe for a fact they can make a ton of money with Matt Riddle. So, hey, let's just do this thing. He says he was just cheating on his wife, and that's not so bad. In fact, let's make it a storyline with him and King Corbin. That'll be fine. Let's do that. Because they know for a fact they can make money with Matt Riddle as long as everybody forgets about all the, you know, rape allegations. Now, they don't know. Now, the rape allegations, the he said, she said, he just cheated on his wife. He's a bad husband. Maybe he'll get better. Is a lot different than, hey, I like to find teenagers on social media and see if maybe they'll send me some nudes and I can send them a nude. So the whole Velveteen Dream thing is very different. They also think they could make a ton of money with Velveteen Dream eventually, and he's another young guy they don't want to like let slip through their fingers, so that somebody else with not a lot of scruples signs him, grooms him, to use a term that actually fits, and he becomes a huge star elsewhere. What this is to me, Vince's MO has always been, I don't care if I don't want to play with all the toys. I want them, so you can't have them. He's a toddler who's like playing with the train set, and then some other toddler comes over and wants to play with the blocks. And then he says, no, the blocks are mine too. And that's what he does with his entire roster until he decides, well, I know this person's bugging me. I'm gonna get rid of them. Only if I think none of the other toddlers will want to play with them. Maybe even I'll play with them in a way that'll make the other toddlers not want to play with them. Like, that's basically what Vince does all the time. But it's different with certain guys he thinks he could make money off of. And I don't think that they know yet what they're going to do with Austin Theory. The whole thing with him, like, being, like, absconded from Raw, where he was a part of Seth's stable, and now he's just back on NXT without a word about what happened, it shows to me that they really don't know what the hell they're doing with him either.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. That's definitely a situation with a lot of layers to it, and something that, we'll see what happens. See what happens going forward with Austin Theory. Zach Connor with another super chat says, I'm just waiting to see Dunn versus Thatcher. That'll be really good. I don't know, like, when that'll happen or how, like, I don't know with kind of the status of, like, the guys from the UK being able to wrestle the guys from the States is and everything.
Yeah, they're going to start taping stuff in the UK. And to me, like the guys who are stuck in the UK who were NXT guys but are in the UK are just going to just wrestle in UK matches until they get the go-ahead to be able to come over to the States. But yeah, Pete Dunne, like, and again, old NXT would have made it a storyline for weeks leading up to the match. Dunne getting revenge on Thatcher for breaking up the Broserweights and all that kind of stuff. Like, it would have been a major deal. I don't know if by the time Dunne is available to wrestle in the States, if they even have a Dunne versus Thatcher match, because that's old news. That's a storyline we did like 6 months ago, and we're probably not going to bring it up. But like, it's there to be had, to have a great match, to have Pete Dunne get revenge on behalf of his old Broserweight, Matt Riddle, by making Thatcher tap out in the fight pit. Like, there's a great thing to be had there that I don't think they're going to do.
Yeah, I think you're totally right about that. And I love the fight pit. Like, that was something where that's where I really realized how invested they were in Thatcher. Like, when they had him just beat, I mean, it was a clean win. I mean, obviously, like, he used the cage and all that stuff, but it was totally legal within the confines of the match. And the way that they put Thatcher over on Riddle's way, you know, to NXT, I can't say enough good things about him. And Pete Dunne, someone I've been high on for, I mean, since the first time I saw him, and somebody that the story's all there, and I hope that they capitalize on that. So what we have next is a hour-long four-man NXT title match. And before we start talking about it, I kind of want to preface it by just throwing this out there once again. Super chats are going to be the way for us to make sure to get your statement out there and any questions you have about this, because there's a lot going on in this match. There was obviously the finish is going to be very polarizing, what people like or dislike about it. So if you want your voice heard, any amount of super chat, we'll make sure to do that. So let's just jump into this. Now, as we said at the top of the show, this match, these guys went for an hour straight, and it was them going hard for an hour straight. This wasn't like this the pedal was down to the gas, and they were speeding the entire time. And as I said at the top of the show as well, it was one of these matches where we were a half hour in, and I was literally like, I came into my office here to start getting set up for the podcast, because I'm like, oh, I got to make sure everything's, you know, we're good to go for the show, because we're going to have to get started here in a minute. And then I realized there's still a half hour left in the match. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this has been pretty darn good. First fall of the match was Finn Balor hitting a coup de grace onto Adam Cole. Any thoughts on kind of what was going on in this match leading up to that first fall? Because we saw like people running around the ring. We saw flips, dives, and everything you could think of before even the first fall happened.
Right. No, this is really laid out. Really well laid out. The whole first half of the match is just these guys testing the waters on each other, hitting big moves, and then got moves being kicked out of. Like I thought it was going to be like 5-4-4-4. That's what I thought it was going to be by the end. It's a 60-minute Iron Man match, and there's dudes everywhere. People are going to get random pinfalls out of like all kinds of stuff, and people are going to be like, okay, well, listen, I'm stuck in this Fujiwara armbar, and it's 20 minutes into the match. I'm going to tap now so my arm doesn't get broke, and I'm out of the match for the rest of the night. Like that made sense to me that you were going to have a lot of pinfalls. The way they did it is probably more along the lines of how they would you would expect them to do it. But I did love that this again, these are four consummate professionals. These are four of I called it the Mount Rushmore match, because I mean, I don't know who you put on there besides one of these guys. I mean, there are guys you could name them, and you would say Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, Samoa Joe. Those are all guys that I'd be like, yes, I agree. They're right there. But I don't know which one of these four guys I take off to put one of those four guys on. So really, is the Mount Rushmore actually eight heads and it's those eight guys? Then you got an argument. People are like, oh, you throw these people in there and these people. Like, no. To me, I'm watching these four guys and they all implicitly, if not explicitly, know each other so well. They've had so many matches against each other. Like, it's just these guys are able, and I really want to know, like, how much of this was just completely called in the ring by these four guys, like, just knowing, here's, like, I know where I've got to be because I never miss a spot like that. Guys breaking up pinfalls, guys being where they need to be on dives, all this kind of stuff. It was all set up so perfectly, so you could have the first half hour with no pinfalls, and still I was on the edge of my seat.
Yes, And it's also one of those things where, like, these guys are getting, like, beaten down. Like, they're getting beaten down for that first half hour. So it's one of those things where also, like, theoretically speaking, like, kind of logically speaking, really any move should, like, I expect to see finishing moves get pinfalls. Like, that's what I'm conditioned to as a wrestling fan. But every now and then, if someone gets beat up bad enough, I'm like, you know what? Maybe a hard enough clothesline will take them out. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how I felt during this match. We got to a point where, you know, Balor was the only one who had a pinfall at one point. And then we get to Ciampa being the one to hit fairy tale ending. Jeez. Hits the move and Gargano slides in and steals the pinfall for the second fall. So like there, what do you think at this point? So it's like, you know, obviously our Gargano is kind of being like kind of the slimy heel in this situation. But at the end of the day, we kind of had four heels in this match, a couple of tweeners, but I expected to see a lot of heelish stuff. And this was the first like really big heel move that I saw here was Gargano stealing that pinfall.
And I love that he stole it from Ciampa. Like, I love that Ciampa did all the work to get that pinfall. And then just Gargano snakes in there, shit cans him to the outside and gets the pinfall. And I love his face. He knew what he did was a chicken shit thing to do. He doesn't care. Like, I think that like again, we talk about these guys and everything, and Gargano going from the whitest of white meat baby faces to the slimiest little, you cockroach, I just want to squish you. That kind of heel, that's hard to do, to be able to do both those things so well, and he does both those things so well. And I thought it was a really great way of telling that story. All of these guys' personal stories, like individually, not even like the relationship between like Gargano and Ciampa or Cole and Finn, not even that, but just like individually, this they each of them were true to their character. And there's like a way to be like, okay, we got all four heelish guys in there. It's easy for them to all kind of blend together. No. Like Ciampa was vicious, and Gargano was opportunistic and slimy, and Balor was super athletic but ruthless, and Cole was like a hybrid of all four. Like, I just thought it was really, really great how they could do all of that together, and again, mesh this whole thing together so well. And the thing I keep coming back to is people who are upset about the non-finish. And I'm like, I'm fine with it because I enjoyed the journey so much. And I know we're still going to get a great one-on-one match that is like, that they're not going to bring it up, but it obviously has years of history spanning two companies behind it. Like, that's really, really great.
Yes. JJ Lee chiming in with the super chat says, I assumed the worst because of the spoiler. Well, we're assuming most people didn't have the spoilers, but so you knew going into it. And it says, but the match rocked and the finish was done so well that he didn't mind it. It says two huge matches next week. And I believe we're referring to the Mercedes Martinez and Rhea Ripley match on top of that. So yeah, couldn't agree more there. So moving on this match, man, we had Adam Cole getting that next pinfall at the Panama Sunrise onto Johnny Gargano. So now we're at, you know, 1-1-1 with Ciampa being the only one without a pinfall, but that changes pretty quickly because Ciampa, then hits, I believe it was another fairy tale ending onto Adam Cole. I think Adam Cole took the first three pinfalls, as a matter of fact, aside from Balor pinning Gargano, I think Adam Cole took all the other falls up to this point, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So then we're all tied up 1-1-1-1. And I think that's about at around the halfway point, if I remember correctly, once again. So it's one of these things where it's like, it's all tied up and we still know there's a lot of match left, but like we've been saying, these guys just went all out. One critique that I have, I just want to get your opinion on this because I've never actually talked about this on any podcast ever before. And it's very minimal, but it's just something that bugs the heck out of me. And I don't know if others agree. Why do they call Finn Balor's 1916 the 1916 when he does it the reverse way? Like every other move in history is like, has a different name. Yeah. If you speak it a little bit, but his is the 1916, no matter how he does it. And I just really, it bugs me.
Yeah, no, they should call it the 6191.
Right, the reverse, right,
exactly. Yeah, or the 1619. You know, I don't know, maybe there's something terrible happened in 1619 in Ireland. I don't know, I have to check out the history books. the Celts ran roughshod. I don't know, I feel you because I certainly have my own pet peeves. I based an entire podcast around them. But that's not one of mine. Your particular one is not one of mine, but I feel for you.
Yes. And I understand them not calling it the Bloody Sunday, like what he called it, you know, back in the day. But
again. Oh no, we can't call it the Bloody Sunday because there's blood in it. What are the kids going to think? I mean, kids get bloody noses all the time. It's about a little boy who got a bloody nose on a Sunday when he went to church and he had to wear a different shirt. that's what you tell your kid. I'm sorry.
So, you know, obviously, I mean, there's so much happened in this match. These guys are just killing each other out there. We get to the point where it's all tied up 1-1-1-1. The match is starting to wrap up. We're at a point where, you know, it's getting close. Gargano is out on the top rope. I mean, he's just kind of hanging there. Ciampa is trying to set him up for something big, and he gets him up in his the Celtic cross,
air raid crash.
Yeah. Jumps off the ropes, nails it, similar to how he has like when he had the Gargano on the announce desk like years back, and like jumped off. And I mean, it's one of his deadly moves, is like when he's jumping off of something with that air raid crash, that's a big deal. He hits it, but right as he hits it, Finn Balor with another coup de grace to get the pin with almost no time left. So we've got Balor up with two wins, everyone else with one. And then I don't know if kind of the story here is Balor just like thought time was about to expire, so he was just celebrating, because part of me wants to believe like, man, you haven't heard the bell yet. Look around to make sure like no one else is there. And So I didn't really like that, but it all makes sense because he's sitting there celebrating, and from behind with no time left, Adam Cole hits that last shot, goes for the pin. And I've seen people in the chat, and I'll address this. I would imagine there was a little bit of editing done to make sure that added.
I'm willing to let that go. That's fine. The story is that Adam Cole got the final pinfall with 1 second remaining on the clock. I'm totally fine with that. If it had been live and they had done it with 3 seconds left on the clock, I'm fine with that. If they had been live and it had been like, and it would actually gone to zero for like a half a second before the buzzer sounded, I'd be fine with that too. Because all of the moving parts that have to be there for this thing, for Ciampa to hit the air raid crash at the exact right time, for Ballard to hit the coup de grace at the exact right time, get the pinfall with, and this is one of those things I was watching it. You know how you're watching football, mm-hmm. and the opposing team scores a touchdown to go up by 2 points with like 48 seconds left, and you go, no, they left him too much time. Brady's going to go down there and get a field goal. You just know it's going to happen. That was my first thought. Was when they hit the pinfall and Finn went up by one pinfall with like 12 seconds left. There's too much time on the clock. There's too much time on the clock. And I love that there's no clock in that arena. Like, I didn't see one. So there's no way Balor could know. Nobody's counting down for him. He thinks he won, or that there's probably a minute left on the clock. He has no idea. I loved all of this. The ref has to get in perfect position to make that final call. All of it. I thought it was great. One spot that I make sure we don't miss because I love, again, how it tells little stories of everybody is Ciampa doing the double Willow's Bell on Cole and Gargano and then rolling Cole over to pin him while Gargano is just lifeless, laying still in the second rope. I thought that was such great character work because if that had been Finn, I wouldn't have liked it. If that had been Cole, even, I wouldn't have liked it. It had to have been Gargano, and it was such a perfect sell of that particular move in that particular situation, which is why he wasn't able to break up that pinfall because he was still unconscious, tied up in the second rope. I thought that was great. And there were so many of those little things throughout the entire show.
Yeah, there's even like the spot I really liked when Balor was just jumping off the ropes and just stomping. I think it was whoever the two on the ground were at the time. Probably, I can't remember who was on the ground at the time, but he was literally just jumping up in the air, springing off the bottom rope and just taking turns. Stomp, 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 stomp. Only thing I didn't like about it is I didn't try to pin either of them after that. Like, you hit them with like 20 each, like at least attempt the pinfall. But that is nitpicking at its finest. Like, I'm not expecting him to win off of that, but it would have been nice to, like, you know, because we see all that, and then I'm pretty sure they went to commercial like right after, and I'm like,
there were a lot of ads, and I understand it's a full hour, but they did a good job with the picture in picture. It was just like one of those things where every time it felt like, okay, it's picking up, and it did. You were watching the inset, and I was like, this is actually really compelling. But if you're not actually really paying attention to that upper left quadrant of your screen, you have no idea it's going on.
Yeah. Anything else about this match you want to touch on? Like, I mean, obviously there's so much to it.
This is great because they don't know what to do. And I think I wish they had, I don't know how you do it differently specifically, but I did think it was funny that the score is at the end of the hour, 2-2-1-1. The guys with two are tied. So it doesn't make any sense to me that Cole and Balor would be like, I'm the champion. I'm the champion. like Cole, your final pinfall, because it happened in the last 3 seconds, doesn't count as two pinfalls. Like, you tied it up. Like, I mean, Balor could say that came too late. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or Cole could say, I got it in just under the thing, so we're tied.
Right.
But Cole can't say, I'm the champion. Like, that, none, there's no scenario in which you're the champion. There's a scenario in which you didn't get the pinfall in time, and there's a scenario which you did. Either you're not the champion or you're tied. And if you're tied, you're not the champion. But I do love, I love William Regal, and I'm so glad to see him back live, because all those little Zoom calls he was doing just didn't do it for me. Being him to come down and hold the thing and, like, in the moment, have the thing, like, all right, here's what we're doing. Next week on Super Tuesday 2, we're going to have one more match. One pinfall to the finish. Like, that's just a match. Like, one pinfall to the finish is just a match. I don't know why. But the way he says it makes me believe that not all matches are one pinfall to the finish. I mean, some aren't, but a normal match. He's describing a normal match. Sudden death, gentlemen. Sudden death. All pinfalls are usually sudden death. You don't get, like, a 2 out of 3 falls match, but then you would actually have to call it that. I will say this, that I am sorely disappointed in NXT, that they're calling it Super Tuesday 2 and not something more clever like Super Deuce Day. You know what I mean? You know, or yeah. Super Tuesday. Like, what is, whatever it is, or maybe it is Super Tuesday, but you actually write it out TWO's Day. You know, maybe you write it as Super. It, when you hear it, it still sounds like Super Tuesday, but when you see it written out, it's still Super Tuesday. I don't know, but Super Tuesday 2 is literally the least interesting way you could say it.
Super Taboo Tuesday.
Yeah, there you go.
Where the fans don't get to choose the matches.
No, that's true.
I did find it a little. I mean, once again, this is nitpicking. I liked all this, by the way. Like, I liked all this. I'm not down on this at all. But, like, same kind of thing when, like, you know, you're talking about Regal. It's sudden death and blah blah blah. Next week for the title, I was kind of surprised that, like, Balor and Cole were both just like, yeah, cool, yeah, sudden death, yeah, next week I'm going to see it. And they're like, not just being, no, we need to settle this right now. We just went an entire hour. We have killed ourselves. Now we should finish this now. But instead, I mean, obviously they're building for next week. I'm excited for next week, and I believe it'll be both of us next week
again, yeah,
as well. So next Tuesday you can catch me and Alex again. Alex, is there any kind of final thoughts you have on this show before we kind of wrap it up here?
It's interesting that of the four, the guys that I thought were most likely to win were Finn and Ciampa. I did not think that they were going to go Gargano again. And I didn't think that so quickly after having lost it, they were going to go Cole. So it coming down to Balor and Cole means to me it's Balor's got to win that match, right? So yeah. The match itself is going to be great, but Balor's got to win that match. You can't go back to Cole after Cole just lost, you know, I don't know. Like, but if they do it, maybe they've got some kind of long-term plan. Maybe he'll be a transitional champion and Pat McAfee will become your new long-term 400-day champion. I'm interested. I don't know what you do with Ciampa now. Just keep him the hell away from Gargano. We don't need any more of that. It was cute to see them, like, have that almost standoff and then get chucked out before they had the too sweet off. But I don't need to see any more of it. So I don't know if Ciampa, like, busts down the card and is going for Priest, but they've already got a whole lineup that goes for Priest. I don't know what you do with Ciampa, but he's white hot as a heel after coming back last week and wrecking Jake Atlas. And listen, they bill him as 201 pounds. That man is granite. There's no way he weighs 201 pounds. He weighs 215 at least. But if he's billed at 201 pounds, he fits the description. Have him be cruiserweight champion and just wreck everybody because they're way too small for him. I don't know. But you can't just have him come back, destroy Jake Atlas as a means of saying, I have returned, I am here. Put him in this match, have him finish out of the running, and then what? You got to have something. I don't know what it is, but you got to have something for him.
Yeah, I still remember first round of the Cruiserweight Classic. Yes. Camp versus Gargano.
He's gained a lot of muscle in 5 years.
Sure.
4 years, a lot of muscle.
Very fair. I also want to throw it out there too. Like, we didn't see the Undisputed Era come out and try to help Adam Cole tonight in a match where there's no disqualifications. So I thought that was interesting. And I do think I sound like a broken record to anybody who watches any of my shows, listens to any of my podcasts, has seen me here on Fightful anywhere else. You probably already know where this is going. If Adam Cole wins the title again, which I think Finn Balor will, but I would love a scenario where Adam Cole wins that title and then Kyle O'Reilly challenges him for it. Like, I want to see something happen with Undisputed Era. They've started to put Kyle in a couple singles matches. I want to see that push very badly. And they had such great matches in Ring of Honor, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, that I really want to see them one-on-one in an NXT main event. So that's kind of be my consolation there. But I do expect Bauer to win. But I feel like if the Undisputed Era does break up to some extent, that Adam Cole champion could be interesting.
Yes, I agree. It depends on what they do with him. They have to have a real storyline planned out with serious beats to go back to Adam Cole after a 400-day reign, after losing it to Keith Lee, who then lost it to Karrion Kross. Like, going right back to Cole after two basic transitional champions, when he doesn't have to beat either of those guys in order to get back the championship, seems a little odd. Balor becoming NXT champion again, but this time is a wildly different Balor, to me, presents so many more opportunities for things.
Yeah, I agree. Well, man, we made it through another one today, and no technical issues. So
that's good.
Happy about that. No technical issues. Let's clap that up. Alex, before we get out of here, man, make sure everyone knows where to find you at.
Yes, you can follow me at Alex Sourgraps on the Twitter. Tomorrow night I will be doing my normal Tuesday Sour Graps, where I'll be talking about Raw and about much of Payback, and just shitting all over Kevin Dunn.
There you go. If you want to follow me on Twitter, my handle is at Fight Talk _. That's FIGHTTALK_. I got some live chats coming up with some different YouTube channels and stuff like that. And I do some MMA video edits and stuff for some channels and whatnot. So anything that I do, podcasting and whatnot, I just try to keep that updated on my Twitter, try to keep that like as a little hub for just letting y'all know. I'm not huge on social media anymore. Like, I'm not big on like using Instagram and all this, but I try to just throw some stuff out there on Twitter that I think y'all might like. So once again, that's Fight Talk _. I'll be back here again with Alex next Tuesday to talk about NXT Super Tuesday. So y'all have a good one. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.